Kia ora, welcome to episode 18 of The Good Oil, Conversations with New Zealand Painters. In this episode, I visit Jeffrey Harris at his studio in Otupoti. Jeffrey is a self-taught artist that is over 50 years into his practice. His work is held in numerous public and private collections, including the Auckland Art Gallery Toi o Tāmaki, the Christchurch Art Gallery Te Puna o Waiwhitu, the Fletcher Collection Te Papa, and the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. Jeffrey has also been the subject of a book by Justin Patton titled Jeffrey Harris, and has received several honours and awards. There are images of the paintings we talk about on the Good Oil Jeffrey Harris Instagram post. In this episode, you'll hear Jeffrey talk about how he considers his bright palette an antidote to lots of New Zealand painting, how a chance encounter in the New Zealand Woman's Weekly and then correspondence with Michael Smither connected Jeffrey with important figures in New Zealand art history that his work now stands alongside, how the awareness of having limited time left is demanding that he makes the best works he possibly can, how a sense of being on the outside looking in with family has influenced his paintings of human relationships, working on single paintings for decades, and how he feels about where paintings end up, for better and sometimes for worse. We started by talking about growing up in relative isolation in Aotearoa.
It was sort of formed the basis of my career, that isolation and being separate from not being part of any sort of art movement or group of people, yeah.
So even as a kid, you had a sense that being isolated in Banks Peninsula, Aotearoa, was shaping, at least, if not you, a future practice.
Yeah, well, I developed my own sort of interior world and my own imagination grew. So I had this sort of resource to build on, and which I've carried on throughout my life, yeah. But the first person that got me into art was my grandmother, who lived in Aotearoa, and she gave me pads, and you know, she encouraged me, and I did a lot of drawing. Yeah,
because she was an art fan, and she identified a talent in you.
Well, I was her favourite grandchild, but I don't think she was into art. But you just did pick up on this, and did give me these pads and drawings, and yeah, she was my first sort of thing into, you know, visual art, yeah.
Yeah. But then being where you were, so, you know, relatively isolated, Banks Peninsula, like, where was the rest of the inspiration coming from? Because, I don't know, were there many art books in the house or...?
No, there was nothing. It just came out of my, you know, as a kid, sometimes if you're an isolated kid, you build an imaginary world, so you're actually talking to people and you have these imaginary friends and you have these imaginary things. So I used to walk around the farm sort of talking to myself and building up this sort of imaginary world, which... you know, later on I could express, you know, yeah.
This is like 10, 11, 12-year-old Jeffrey.
Yeah.
But at that time, no great concept of, you know, becoming a painter?
No, not till I went to high school. I just had my grandmother, and she died quite young, so there was there was a gap there. But when I went to high school, I had a really good art teacher who really... hooked on, who I really got on with, and he was really supportive. And that was the first time that I had the idea of sort of being special or being an artist, yeah, through his sort of encouragement.
So had fostered that talent and pointed out to you that you, you know, weren't...
Well, he treated me like a special person because, I mean, all the art class had to do a set subject, and he said, no, you just do what you want to do.
Oh, right. So you were kind of working out on your own.
Yeah, and he took one of my paintings and hung it in the staff room. He gave me the art prize. You know, he just made you feel like you're sort of a unique, talented person. Yeah.
So you didn't have a great degree of awareness of your own talent before then?
No, you just did something like you're a kid. You know, yeah. No.
Yeah, that time at high school then, like, really important in terms of beginning to form the basis of a practice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, in my little... I guess they made allowances, you know, I was at boarding school, and I remember I had all my sort of paintings around, you know, in the boarding school, you know, which wouldn't generally be allowed, you know. And people... Also, I was really interested in literature and writing, and I had a fantastic English teacher who was the same, you know, who treated me not special, but, yeah, as...
But they recognised an intellectual
So I did a lot of writing as well as painting. And at one stage it was like, I'll either do writing, I'll become a writer or a painter, you know. So I had these two sort of...
Options,
yeah. Eventually I chose painting, but...
And why? Like, what, you know, was paint? Did painting feel like a stronger...
I guess it was a stronger current, yeah. I wrote a lot of poetry and stuff, and I did this probably writing thing up until I was about 19 or so, and then dropped it, yeah.
And when you say a stronger current, like the satisfaction that you felt from painting?
Yeah, partly the satisfaction and also the response, I think, too.
The response you were getting from other people?
Yeah. Yeah, there was more sort of feedback from the painting area, I guess. Yeah. So that's why I chose that.
Because when I interviewed Graeme Sidney, around this time last year, Graeme said that he immediately recognised your talent as a quote unquote real painter. Mm. So he was implying then that he had a sense that you had a real artistic purity, like in your expression.
Mm.
When did you really start recognising that? Sounds like it was at high school.
Yeah, it was at high school, and then I had about 3 years. You know, when I left high school and I left that environment, I had about 3 years. See, my parents weren't sympathetic, so they didn't...
They weren't sympathetic to your painting.
They weren't sympathetic to my painting. And my my grandmother died early, so...
Yeah.
When I left high school, there was a vacuum, and I had 3 years of sort of in the wilderness, and my father... I had to get a job, and I was a shop assistant. But eventually, I saw this... Michael Smith paintings in the Women's Weekly, and so I wrote to him.
The Women's Weekly were publishing Michael Smith paintings?
Yeah, they used to have an art thing. There was one on Pat Hanley, and this is the old Women's Weekly, yeah, back in 1969.
That seems incredibly old looking back, but yeah. Great. What's happened, Women's Weekly? Total chance encounter. You're flicking through a Women's Weekly...
No, my parents got the Women's Weekly every week or whatever. So my parents had no books. They had magazines. Yeah. So you just flip through the magazines.
But that's what I mean. Like a more or less chance encounter of you looking through those and seeing a Smither painting and thinking, what the hell is this? That's pretty flash.
Yeah. So I wrote to him, and 3 months later he wrote back, and so there I had a correspondence with him, and then I started sending him paintings. He was in Central Otago, and then he showed me the Ralph Hodori, and that's how it sort of built.
You spent time learning from, or at least time with, Hodori, Smither, Colin McCann.
Yeah.
How do those experiences inform and influence practice? Like, I'm assuming probably maybe more approach than stylistically, but...
Yeah, not much in terms of the content or the, as you say, style of the work, but in terms of practicalities, yeah. Michael Smither got me out of that shop and painting full time. I'm really grateful I'll always be grateful to him for that, you know. He took me from the shop into painting full time, and that was great, yeah. So I came down and shared the studio. He was the Francis Hodgson Fellow in 1970. And he gave me a room in that studio, and Ralph Hodori had a room in the front. So there were three artists in this one building, yeah. So it's quite unique, really, yeah.
Quite extraordinary characters to be able to spend some time with.
Yeah, well, it was amazing people to be with, yeah.
You were a few years younger than them?
Oh, hell yeah, I was 20. Yeah, they would have been 30s, yeah. Or even in Ralph's case, near 40, I guess, yeah. So, yeah, it was fascinating to be with these two great painters who were established, and I wasn't established, but, Yeah, it was good. It was fantastic.
Some incredibly important guiding hands.
Mm.
Again, if not stylistically, in
just
terms of how to be a painter.
As mentors or as people who, who are living, you know, what you wanted to do, you know. So, that was a really important year in my life.
1970.
Yeah.
Although you ended up being a Francis Hodgkins
fellow. Yeah, 7 years later. Yeah,
1977. Yeah. I'm assuming that must have built in a lot of, like, confidence into the practice as well, because you would have only been, 28, 29?
The Francis Hodgkins built a lot of attention. Yeah, so you got a lot of people visiting the studio. You got a lot of opportunities to show and things like that, yeah.
So at that point, you were beginning to establish a name a little bit. People were beginning to be exposed to
your
work.
I did right back in 1971. I had one of my paintings bought by the Auckland Art Gallery, and Colin McCann was behind that. And, there were...
When you say Colin McCann behind it, so he would have been working at the gallery then?
There was a... I forget the name of the exhibition, but it was an exhibition at the Auckland Art Gallery, Young Contemporaries or something like that, and they picked out three paintings to acquire, and Colin McCann was on the committee. So I was one of the three that were chosen, yeah. So there were moments like that earlier than the Francis Hodgkins Fellowship where there was recognition, yeah.
Although, apart from the Hodgkins Fellowship... Which I know is not training as such, but there's never been any formal training. Apart from, I suppose, high school, it sounded like there was...
Well, that wasn't formal training. That wasn't training at all, because he didn't teach me anything.
Just encouragement.
Yeah, just support. Yeah, blind. No. There was no... I've never really had any formal teaching at all.
Do you feel like that has given you a greater freedom to pursue your practice the way you'd
A lot of people who have been to art school are not happy. They have a difficult time adjusting to the real art world, so in a way it's probably better that I didn't go.
You don't feel like you really missed anything by not pursuing formal training?
Well, I probably did at the time, but looking back now, no.
You've said about your practice that I'm not striving for anything outside myself. By that, you mean that you want the practice to be quite inward-looking?
I guess a lot of my work is inward-looking, yeah. But it comes from me. It's not really a response to sort of political things or environmental things, any of these other issues. It's just coming from, you know, this interior world that I built up, it just comes from that. And that is so strong in me that it sort of precludes sort of being much interested in anything else.
Because it's interesting looking at those contemporaries we've already talked about, so Hauteri, Smither, McCann, Graham, Sidney.
Hmm.
Like all four of those characters that you're literally painting with they're all really keen observers of either New Zealand landscape, politics, or the New Zealand experience, if not all three of them. But New Zealand doesn't really appear explicitly in your work. So your experience, you know, you haven't wanted to make Geoffrey Harris paintings grounded in New Zealand. Like they could apply
anywhere.
Yeah.
First of all, I wasn't aware of New Zealand painting because when I worked at the shop, I discovered the Christchurch Public Library, and I went there and got all the art books out, and I used to get piles and piles of them, and that's how I sort of educated myself about painting.
Right, and probably, I'm guessing at that time, there weren't a whole lot of New Zealand published art books, so you were looking at what, like Renaissance?
This was mainly European painting, and what appealed to me was a lot of early religious painting, Renaissance painting, Gothic art, and Expressionist painters. Initially, I wasn't aware of New Zealand painting. Then I went around the galleries, and I didn't see much that I liked, apart from Colin McCann, who really knocked me out. And then I saw the Michael Smither paintings. And then, the Michael Smither paintings were religious paintings, the crucifixions and the St. Francis paintings. This sort of slotted in with some of the European work, you know, the religious imagery. So this is what appealed to me, yeah.
So ironically, you were seeing New Zealand paintings that weren't necessarily placed in New Zealand anyway.
Yeah, that's right. They weren't landscape paintings or anything. So So it took a while to get into New Zealand painting, yeah. But, the one I mainly, people like McCann, then I, I met him and, and because I didn't have any teaching or, that's when I asked if I could go and work with him. Yeah, so I went and lived with him for a month.
Whereabouts was that?
In Auckland.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, in Greyland, was it? Yeah.
So that had to be quite the learning experience, surely.
It was, yeah. It was really a tough month. And
why was it tough?
Because he was really hard on me.
Hard on you as in, like, you need to work hard if you're going to be a painter?
Yeah, discipline and challenging you, you can't do that, or, you're not good enough, or you're this and that, and pushing, really pushing you, which I didn't like at the time, but looking back, it was good, experience.
Yeah, none of us do at the time, but
no.
You look back on.
But getting back, I mean, these paintings here, they're New Zealand, but they're not. I'm not specifically, never have been. I'm more interested in the whole world,
Yeah.
So,
for listener reference, you say these paintings here, we're sitting in your studio in Dunedin, and it looks like Banks Peninsula.
It is,
Like Banks Peninsula to me, but it's, not necessarily. It could be placed anywhere in the world.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Does that mean you've had little interest in, reflecting New Zealand and New Zealand identity? It's more been a practice.
It's more my identity and my experience. So, but these are things that New Zealand people, but they're not specific to New Zealand, no.
Yeah.
Although
I'm curious, given Smither and McCann and what New Zealand, strongly New Zealand paintings they are, what was it that appealed in those works? You said McCann knocked you out a little bit.
It was the intensity of the work and the the power, and some of them quite emotional, very strong work, yeah. So that's what drew me to them, yeah. And they were strong people, like Hotori was a, he helped me a lot. He was a great humanitarian person, caring and, deep soul. Yeah, amazing to be around, yeah.
You spent time with him more than just in the fellowship studio?
Yeah, I did, yeah. He was very supportive and, he used to take me up to his house for meals and things like that, and and he also helped me financially when I needed some money, and he was sort of like a father figure at some stage, in the early 70s, yeah. He helped me a lot, yeah. I was really lucky to have those people earlier on because they were, they're quite strong, important people. And
well, especially in hindsight now, given New Zealand art history,
yeah.
Extraordinary characters
across. Yeah, so I was really lucky. Because there's not the equivalent around now, I don't think, so much. I couldn't sort of think of who to go to or what, if you're a young artist.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so it was a unique sort of slot there that I was lucky to be part of, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You mentioned Smither's crucifixion work, and inevitable that we talk about yours and the role of, crucifixion in your works, because there are countless, I guess crucifixion almost appears countless, countless times. But you're not religious, right?
No, I don't. I'm not quite sure why I'm attracted to those images, but I am, and I always, from the beginning, I always will. They sort of knocked me out, and so there's something there that acts on my psyche or something. Yeah, but it's could be the suffering or the anger, the emotional.
It's interesting, 50 years into the practice and painting crucifixion paintings, you still don't sound sure exactly why it appeals as a religious motif or what it represents to you.
I don't like analysing what I do too much, so, it's, no. Someone else will have to figure it out.
You, in terms of, other people figuring it out, you famously, or maybe not famously, I don't know, don't sign your paintings. It's important for you them to be in the world, but it's not important that they're signed by Geoffrey Harris.
No. See, I quite like to be anonymous. As a, you know, I don't like the sort of ego thing of painting where, you know, people just look. That's a they go for. Some people just go and look at the signature, you know. But no, I like now. I just like them to be paintings that just exist in the world without being specifically by me, or I want to be invisible, pretty much. That's part of the reason I like living down here. And I hate the social. I don't like. I've never liked the social aspect of the of an art career, or you know, I hate openings, all this sort of stuff. So yeah. And as you get older, I just want the paintings to exist out there with nothing.
Does that in a way, though, put more pressure, is probably the wrong word, but is it motivating maybe for you to make better work if you're not going to be signing them?
Yeah. I just want to make great paintings if I can. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the, you know, the Renaissance paintings are not signed. There's only one Botticelli. He only signed one painting, Botticelli, and it's not a very good one. But quite a while ago, I decided I didn't want them to be. I mean, people reckon, you know, they say, oh, that's a Bill Hammond, Jeffrey Harris, Ralph Hodery. You know, no. What about, well, that's a great painting. That's not a very good painting.
Yeah. Mm. With the work being so personal, so especially, you know, we talked about it being, I suppose, an exploration of self more than anything.
Hmm.
And you've just talked about just wanting great work to be in the world.
Hmm.
Is it important to you, or do you care where work ends up?
Yeah, it is important, yeah. And, I prefer it to be in institutions, obviously, yeah.
You prefer it to be in institutions for the public access?
Yeah. They should be accessible to the public, yeah. And you want great paintings to be accessible to the public. You don't want them in private collections. And you don't want people you don't like having your paintings, you know.
has that happened?
Yeah, it has happened a couple of times. Yeah, there are a couple of people who I didn't really get on with, and they've got some of my paintings, and I wish they didn't have them, you know.
Yeah.
Because the paintings are quite personal often, so they're not just sort of like a box of chocolates or a chair or a bit of furniture or something. They're much, you know, some of them are, you have a deep attachment to. So ideally you'd like them to be in a place or someone to have them that you approve of, that you like, yeah.
So are you now quite careful about where work will end up?
Well, I'm reluctant to let work go to people if I don't really think they've got a strong empathy, or, you know. Yeah. So you have to be aware of, some people might want them for other reasons, you know, investment, all these sort of things.
Yeah.
And yeah, not really interested.
Yeah.
Well, but since, and you know, I've had collectors, you know, throughout my career, and some of them have become friends, and some of them, you know, you like, and then there's some you don't like. yeah. So,
well,
the ideal is the public art galleries. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Well, the work being so personal, as you've just said, like you've found it a really useful way as an exploration of self.
Hmm. Yeah, it was a sort of finding your identity when I was younger. Like, who are you? What are you? Yeah, that sort of answering those questions. Yeah.
It might be an impossible question to answer, but without painting, where do you think you'd be?
So I think I would have done something creative, because, even if I wasn't an initiator of create, I'd be drawn to the creative world, yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like very early on you had a sense of a creative driving force.
Definitely, yeah. And, when I got my school report, it said, you know, I had a big future as a creative person. Academically, I was a failure. You know, I used to go with the, I didn't even bother with, like science, maths. So I got naught. I didn't, when we had the exams.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
I didn't bother, you know. And so I got, my father looked at this thing and he went ballistic, you know. He said, what the hell use is this, you know.
Yeah, we've sent you to boarding school, and
we spent all this money on you and you come out with this. It's got a great creative, you know, in the creative world, but as academically, he's a failure.
Yeah. So. I hope your parents have seen your success as a painter.
They didn't really know. They're both dead now, so yeah. No, unfortunately, it didn't work out. Yeah. They never understood it. They never got it, and they were always sort of. They didn't really like it, so they would have preferred a middle, you know, steady job, middle class house in the suburb. This is what they wanted, yeah. This is what they wanted for their children. They didn't want this sort of stuff, no. Yeah. They didn't like it.
Well, an important part of the practice has been self-portraits as well. So again, I guess on that theme of self-exploration.
Yeah, that was sort of like the soul. But, you know, that was modelled on Durer and a lot of the European people who did self-portraits. But, I mean, Michael Smother did self-portraits. So, and I think Graham's done self-portraits.
Yeah. So did you almost kind of think, well, like, you know, art history dictates that I contribute self-portraits?
No, I mean, I was instinctively did them as a sort of exploration of who are you, sort of, or what are you, know, yeah.
And are they like the self-portraits harder or easier as subject matter?
Probably harder, because you are, you know, examining yourself. If you're painting someone else, you don't have that access to their inner world so much, no.
And that said, you know, there are plenty of family portraits as well.
Yeah.
Willing subjects, the family?
Well, they're all from photographs, so they're not... they don't have a choice.
Right.
I've always been interested in that family group image, yeah, which is sort of iconic. My other grandparents had a place in O'Kane's Bay, which made a deep impression on me. Yeah. And we used to go and stay there, and it was really primitive and wild, and had this fantastic overgrown garden, and it made a big impression on me. And they had Christmases and we used to take the photographs, and they had the tree outside decorated, and there were, yeah, it made a big impact on me, that, because my parents were sort of middle class. They were like nothing in terms of my inspiration, but yeah, I had these two fantastic sets of grandparents which made these strong impressions on me. Yeah,
you've done through family portrait photographs as source material.
Yeah,
possibly painting them a long time after the fact.
A long time. But and then later on, I actually set up, you know, people with, you know, the paintings in mind, you know, like, you two stand there because this is going to be a painting, you know. But yeah, the early ones are on these historic family images. Yeah.
Well, to that point around those subjects, like, virtually, in fact, I think all of your work has people as central subjects. However, they often seem to be standing apart or looking away from one another.
Yeah.
And in fact, often are more likely to be looking at the viewer of the work than one another. So why create that separation between subjects?
I guess that's what I felt. I mean, I probably did feel that an isolation, a separateness, an isolation from this sort of, you know, I was an observer, so I probably wasn't part of this family, you know, that I was on the outside looking in, and you're observing this sort of world. So that's probably why they're looking back and are looking not together, you know, not interacting. Yeah.
An outsider because you were the only one with a strong creative.
Because I grew up, I was isolated. So it wasn't like I interacted with my cousins or brothers and sisters so much, you know. So yeah, I'm sort of an isolated figure in that group here, which, yeah, you're an observer, not a participant, yeah. So the people in the paintings are sort of not participants either. They're sort of like strange people just looking, you know, lost or something, some of them, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if in some ways that might actually be a very New Zealand way to paint.
It could, yeah, I think it is actually, because I think that is very New Zealand, that family thing, and the you know, it's a common experience, I think, when you talk to some people that they feel the same way about their families, yeah.
Yeah, there's a slight, I mean, maybe it's a universal theme, but it does seem that
isolation. No, I think it's quite a New Zealand thing where the families are not, you know, all hugging and bonding. Yeah. No, they're sort of quite separate, within their family,
So maybe you've ended up with a New Zealand practice after all.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of it is New Zealand, actually, more than people say, or maybe we'll be seen later on to be New Zealand. Yeah. Well, because a lot of the figures that I've painted are in the New Zealand landscape. They're isolated people. And I think it's a fairly common New Zealand thing, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Almost New Zealand Gothic.
Yeah, New Zealand Gothic, yeah. That's part of the reason I like it, you know, Southern Gothic down here, you know, because of the sort of isolation and the, you know, the...
Well, the urban landscape even.
It's an urban sort of, thing, yeah.
Well, I suppose Christchurch, Dunedin, both strong Gothic histories.
I guess so, yeah. Although I don't like Christchurch. Because my, you know, the experience, you know, that was sort of like those 3 years were sort of...
Lost.
I couldn't get into Christchurch. Mm. See, I did eventually go around the galleries and I went around some people and, you know, but they said, no, I don't, nothing, yeah.
Oh, dealer galleries. Try and be, like, get representation.
Yeah, other people and they said, no, I don't.
This is in the, like, 70s, 80s?
No, this is in the early 70s, yeah. No, late 60s, actually. There wasn't a lot of galleries around. But,
Geoffrey Harris' work was probably just a little bit too difficult for you.
It was, yeah. So this was when I got this great reception in Dunedin, and I had my first exhibition here in November 1969. So that's why, Dunedin's always felt like a secure base. It's my home, it's protection, I've always been like if you're a wounded bird you come back here to hibernate or whatever. So Dunedin's been great for me. And people here are supportive and friendly, but in Christchurch there was that snobbery and the you didn't go to the art school, you didn't go here, you didn't, we don't know you sort of thing. I found a bit of that when I was in Melbourne. You know, there was a lot of what school did you go to? No. Let's walk away.
Yeah.
So, get fucked.
Yeah.
But Dunedin was the opposite, you know. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To go back to the separation of people in your paintings and the crucifixion works, there's something I've noticed researching for this and looking at paintings a lot more is that, ironically, often with crucifixion works, people seem to be either, helping someone from the cross or attending to them on the cross. So it seems like that crucifixion actually brings people closer together as a thing.
Yeah, the compassion aspect is... that's probably part of the attraction maybe to the image here, is helping people, being compassionate, yeah. It's a very strong feeling within a lot of those earlier paintings, which, yeah.
Well, staying on the theme of crucifixion just for a little bit longer, I wanted to ask about the Dream series of paintings from early 2000s?
Yeah.
So those figures, with the red backgrounds, seem to echo Bacon's, triptych, especially three studies for figures at the base of the crucifixion, so hence the link. And you're a Bacon fan, right?
Yeah. Probably not so much now as I used to be, but I was, yeah.
What's changed?
I don't know. I find them a bit sort of too theatrical now, a bit too, don't know, mannered. I don't know. But there's not such a strong connection. I don't know. I've moved off somewhere else.
Yeah,
Bacon was a very strong influence, especially younger, yeah.
Of the dream paintings,
yeah. Monk too. It's quite a big body of work which hasn't been really shown, and apart from a couple of paintings in public galleries, but
well, they're wonderful paintings.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there's maybe a whole lot. There's a whole lot here. There's about 30 of them here. If you want to, I don't know.
I think maybe after we finish chatting here, I'll ask you to dig a couple out. would love to see them. But I suppose they're not the easiest paintings either.
Probably no. The time hasn't come yet. I think I don't know. Yeah. Unfortunately, but maybe it will.
Yeah. Well, speaking of changing tastes, you're a painter that has had a really steady progression stylistically through career. So, you know, if I think of works from the 70s, they're relatively like large format, like looser in style.
Yeah.
And then you seem to create work in the 80s that was a little bit crisper. And now, especially we look at these works in the studio, they've become smaller and almost harder edge than, or certainly not as loose as they used to be.
Yeah, I think there's a swing between the two styles of very fine detailed work and the more expressionist looser work. So that's been throughout my whole career, I think. In the 70s, I used to do these very detailed drawings and then there are more expressionist works, and then it swings back and forth. But lately it's been more focused on tighter work.
Where it seems to be like you're piling in a lot more detail and a lot more brushwork. Like, again, if I noticed before setting up that there are, I don't know, several dozen very tiny brushes sitting behind
I don't know. I'm spending more time on these paintings and packing more and building them up and up and up. So, it's a process I've been doing for quite a while now.
So have you been quite cognizant of that evolution, you know, of moving from, you know, looser work to these smaller works?
Yeah, it's always been there, right from the start, yeah. So
when you say right from the start, I want to evolve the work. I want for them to change and to...
Well, it's two parts of my personality. So it's just sort of like, you know, you can't deny one. One might be predominant for certain reasons, or the other might dominate, yeah.
Depending on the day of the week or the week or the month.
Yeah, or your mood swings, yeah.
Although one thing that has remained relatively consistent is quite a bright palette, and if anything, maybe it's become brighter. So that bright palette's always been important, and why?
I think the intensity of the colour, and I've always been interested in colour, and a lot of those early paintings that I like, 15th century things, even the stained glasses, it's that brilliant colour. Yeah, and a lot of New Zealand painting, of course, is dark brown or ochre, and I don't like that. I mean, there's too much of it. It's like a, you know. And I think I'm probably reasonably good with it. The colour is one of my main strengths. So, I should go with it, yeah. And also, I think, as I say, I think it's an antidote to a lot of New Zealand painting, which, especially when I was starting out in the 50s and 60s, was like predominantly olive green and, yellow ochre and, I mean, McCann sort of captured all that, but there were a lot of people who painted as well in that sort of palette. But colour, you know, it's got a strong emotional appeal, and the intensity of the colours, and I've always been attracted by that. Yeah,
because it certainly seems with colour that there's a greater and greater saturation being poured into work.
As a vehicle for expressing emotion or depth of feeling or depth of anything, a lot of the painting that I'm doing now is layers, so it's layers and layers of paint, so it's not just one coat of paint, it's about, can be up to, you know, like 15 coats of paint, you know, to bring out this sort of colour, that I want to achieve, yeah.
To deliberately create, like, some transparency and depth of colour that way?
Yeah, it's like a jewel, you know. Yeah, building up these jewel-like colours, it's at one stage I just would paint a painting in a day, but I could never paint a painting in a day anymore. I just wouldn't be satisfied, I could never get what I wanted.
Because you want those richer, like, details.
Yeah, I want
the depth.
Also the depth, when you go into a painting and you're sort of, it's like, And that's why I like the small format. It's like you're standing close and you're peering into, it's like you're going into this world. Yeah, you lose yourself, you go into this thing, yeah.
So you're more fascinated by small paintings now than you are larger format?
There's a lot of painting I don't like, which is sort of big and brash, and but it doesn't have any depth. I'm more want to do lesser paintings, smaller paintings, and much more intensity, you know, the maximum amount of intensity you can achieve, yeah.
Because it seems with the smaller work that structure is getting tighter, I suppose, just by the very nature of smaller work, but they seem more balanced as well. So is it, you know, from a composition point of view, do you have a sense of work being more balanced?
Definitely. So I change things. I mean, earlier I just paint the painting, and I mean, if it's not right, it doesn't matter. Next one. Well, I probably wasn't aware that perhaps my critical faculties are probably more highly developed. So I look at something and say, no, that's not good. That bit there is wrong. So I've got to change that. Where earlier I wouldn't even bother, you know. The painting was done and you got to express yourself, and so you do another one. But now it's got to be all, I've got to get it all right, you know, yeah. So there's a lot more editing and a lot more critical sort of analysing, a lot more looking at a painting and sweating over it and trying to get it right, yeah. Because also when you're getting older, you're not going to be doing a hell of a lot more, so you want to get these ones right. You can't really afford to just be doing a whole lot of work that, well, maybe next time. No, there might not be a next time. You know, get this one right.
So you're really cognizant of there being a limited number of paintings left.
Yeah, well, you know, once you get to in your 70s, you know, you don't have like another 40 or 50 years to slosh around in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got to. Yeah, I want to get them right. Okay. Yeah. And that's sort of what I want to leave behind, yeah.
Yeah. Well, from a process point of view, how do you identify or choose a subject or, you know, what a work is going to be?
Well, I sort of now, I can, you know, because I've done an enormous amount of work and an enormous amount of subjects, I now sort of like go back and pick out subjects, yeah. So there's no need to do new subjects. There's no need to do new things. It's going back, and I mean, there are lots of paintings I still want to do yet, and there's family groups and certain things, certain images that I want to, some that I've already done a version of, I want to do another version of and do it better. I know I can do it better.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that, because there is a lot of repetition in the practice.
Yeah, there are three or four paintings which I've done about like five versions of.
Yeah, and that is like motivated by just wanting to keep improving that version.
Yeah, and also the image is really strong, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't feel the desire to do another version of it. Yeah. So the image in the photograph or wherever it is, yeah, that it's, you know, it deserves to be done better.
What makes a strong image?
Well, composition and the subject matter. Composition, I think, yeah, and that, yeah, you have an emotional, you have some attachment to the image, yeah.
And
that,
photographs...
That's important, yeah.
Photographs are always a reference point, or you just use them when you see the right source material?
More and more of that probably source material, yeah.
You mean you are like using photographs more and more?
Yeah. I mean, I've been through periods where I've used photographs quite a bit, and then periods like the dream paintings or the some other periods in my career where I've just, they're sort of come from other places. But yeah, at the moment, the photographic image is quite important, yeah, as a tool, yeah.
In terms of returning to work, so maybe partly that repetition piece, you're like notorious almost for taking a long time, you know, sometimes to finish work. So for example, Family Group that was shown at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery in the Renaissance Days show in 2016, you credit that work as being painted between 1975 in 2012. So by my reckoning, about 37 years. Why so long in the making? Like, do you...
When I was younger, I moved around a lot and I painted a lot and I left a lot of things unfinished and I was moving. And so there was a whole lot of work that I carried around with me all these years that was unfinished. And now some I go back to and I think, that needs to be finished. That's going to be a great painting.
What leads you back to those works, like, if you look at them? And
because this is the image and the, you know, I mean, if I looked at them and thought, no, there's nothing there, or I wouldn't bother, obviously, but, you know, some of these paintings, that was started in the 70s, that painting over there, and... it's totally changed and I've edited out and changed the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, because it looks like a very contemporary Geoffrey Harris painting.
It is, yeah.
But structurally, the origins of it are in the 70s.
Yeah, but it was painted more, the paintings in the 70s are painted more crudely, the figures are sort of distorted, and so people said, at one stage people said, oh, they're sort of naive or clumsy or they're awkward or... so if you put a painting done now with a 70s painting, there's an enormous difference in technique and colour and composition.
You feel like you've constantly been refining the practice.
Yeah, but a lot of my work is looking back. At this stage, you're sort of looking back over your career and there are certain things that, yeah, you can do that paint, but if you did it now, it'd be 100 times better, so... And it's still important to you, so let's have a go. Let's see if we can do it. You know, you can make that a great image. At the moment, it's just a good painting, but we can make it a great thing. So let's do it.
And it might just be hiding in the studio somewhere, in a corner somewhere, and you look at it and think, "How?"
Well, there is one. There's one out here, another family group, which is of the same vintage as the one that was in the Renaissance days, which I want to get on to, but yeah, everything is taking a long time, so yeah.
Is there any work or it sounds like there is work that will get abandoned, that, you know, you might start and just think, oh, look, it's not working?
Yeah, there are, I mean, if I look back, there are not many, but there are some things I wish I'd never done and some that were just rubbish and, you know, but not a lot, but yeah, I very rarely start... I wouldn't start anything now and abandon it at all. No.
Yeah, again, not enough time left.
At certain periods, there are certain aspects of your work you like, you know, that you favour.
Drawing has been, still is, part of the practice?
No, I don't do any drawing now. I just... paint, because I started out drawing and my grandmother encouraged me to do all that drawing, so I was pretty proficient at drawing when I started, and then I didn't start doing oil painting really until 1970, and all my work before that was on paper, was gouaches, oil pastels and a lot of drawing, so I did some amazing sort of drawings in the 70s and that, but I've sort of done all the drawing now.
Yeah,
out of the system. And I just want to do the paintings, yeah.
Why oil as a preference for...
Just because of that richness that, you know, as we talk, the stained glass, the just the thing you can do with the colour. You can't get those colours in acrylic paint. You can't get that intensity. And the fact that you can rework oil so well, you know. Acrylic is just flat to me. It's just not, doesn't have that depth.
So when you said editing before and reworking now, the ability to be able to take paint off the support.
No, you're just adding paint on top of paint, but if you're doing that with acrylic, it's sort of dull, you know, it sort of deadens the thing. Yeah. Acrylic's just better for a one-off hit, you know.
Yeah.
It dries quickly and, but I've never, I've always loved oil paint. It's sort of fascinating. Possibilities. I just like it, yeah.
Yeah. I think last question, Jeffrey, which I ask everyone, maybe the hardest one, removing any limit of budget or whether a work is held in a public institution, what work or artist work in general would you love to live with?
Yeah, well, that's a hard one, but I've chosen the Rembrandt Jewish Bride painting, which is in Amsterdam. It's sort of has an amazing depth, and once again, an oil paint, and it's full of compassion and colour, and it's very rich, yeah.
All themes that are important for not just you, but appear in your practice as well.
Yeah, things that I'd like to get near to if I could, yeah. But, it's just the ultimate in sort of oil painting richness and tenderness and feeling, yeah.
As always, thanks for listening. Jeffrey is represented by Sweet Gallery in Te Whanganui, Atara, and in Auckland. Please inquire with Sweet about available work. Otherwise, join me for episode 20 of The Good Oil. Until then, ka kite anō.